Hello, it's Thursday, September 28th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. We're glad everybody's tuning in. It's a beautiful, overcast, rainy fall day today, and looks like we're certainly moving in to the autumn. We like this season. It's what comes after it that I'm not a real big fan of.
I like all the seasons.
I'll take three of the four.
Well, you're pretty much stuck with what you get. Right?
Wish we could skip straight from fall into spring, but I don't think that's going to happen. Now, we want to thank everybody for their feedback regarding yesterday's show, and we got quite a few very interesting comments. And the thing that was most striking was, Lisa, that we didn't receive even one negative comment.
Not yet.
About yesterday's show.
And we don't take it back either.
Right. And the thing that really struck us is that the people tuning in to Wing TV most certainly have their eyes open and realize what's going on in regard to what we talked about yesterday. So what we're going to do is just leave it at that, at least for the time being. Mm-hmm. And there's an article on the Wing TV homepage right now that recaps essentially what we said yesterday. So take a look at that. I know that more than one person forwarded us emails that they sent directly to John Statmiller and RBN and says, what the hell are you thinking? You know, get rid of this chump. So we'll leave it at that. Like we said, for the time being. Also, we want to remind everybody that tomorrow on Wing TV, finally, we've been leading up to it for quite a while, the poll results for the worst mainstream media talking head. And to help us along with this show is going to be Sam and Trish Britton from The Information Corner.
Right. Their website is theinformationcorner.com, and you can find out lots of good stuff on their website as well.
Right. And the variety of responses that we've received about this poll is very indicative of how much enmity people out there feel towards the mainstream media. So I'm really excited about it, Lisa. And as
it'll
I said,
fun.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, and we're going to go over the worst of the worst.
They all suck, so it doesn't really matter who's at the top. They're all in the same crap heap.
Right. Now, what we're going to do today is catch up on a couple ideas, a couple things that have been going through our heads. And we came across a very interesting article yesterday that it seems like on November 3rd and 4th of this year, there's going to be what they're billing it as, the first North American secessionist convention in Burlington, Vermont. What this means, I'm sure everybody knows, to secede from the nation means that you pull apart or become separate from the Union.
And is Vermont wanting to secede?
That's what they're doing. There's an organization, and the article refers them to the New Green Mountain Boys. And
how big is it?
I don't know. They're going to have representatives there from not only Vermont, but from a lot of other states in the Union. And even though we're not going to be able to travel to Vermont to cover this or be a part of it, I was talking to Lisa before the show, and I said, here's a question I want to pose to everybody listening to this show today. Regardless of what state you're in, would your state be able to survive
and sustain itself?
Right. If it got no support from the federal government. Now, let me frame it like this. Try to imagine all of the taxes that everybody in your state pays, federal income taxes, Social Security, all the corporate income taxes, all the small independent businesses. What if all of the taxes cumulatively that your state paid or that it went to the federal government was retained within your state?
To be used to maintain the roads and
everything.
The schools.
To keep, yeah. So, would your state be able to survive? Now, I think every state in the Union would not only survive, I think they'd thrive if we're allowed to do this.
Look at all that extra money.
Yeah, and what we have is, they say, well, what about the roads? Well, here's what happens. You have all this taxpayer money, not only from federal income taxes, but also gas taxes. Instead of going directly to contractors in your state, what happens is all this money goes to D.C.
Uh-huh.
It gets sucked up into this vast bureaucracy. There's graft, Everybody has to take their little cut off of the top.
You know, it might even create jobs within the states.
Well, absolutely it would.
A lot of jobs.
It absolutely would, because then the money goes from D.C. and it gets doled out to all the states. And, of course, the most powerful senators get all their pork barrel projects, and money gets sunk down into the different rabbit holes. And what's left is very little from the original. So what if each state, just say in regards to highways, took all of their revenue from taxation, and the state would be able to determine how much gasoline would be taxed and how much the workers would be taxed. All of this money, though, instead of going to D.C. and being sucked up into this whirlpool, they determine how their own money gets spent.
What a concept, huh?
Yeah. And not only that, but each taxpayer would be allowed to do the same thing. So, what now? Of course we need the federal government for a couple things. One would be defense. I mean, we need a military. You can't just say, we'll dismantle the entire federal government and not have a military, because as soon as we did that, we'd be invaded. So there'd have to be a small percentage.
Why can't the states defend themselves, each state?
Well, because they can't afford to pay for interballistic missiles and so forth like that. I don't think there wouldn't be enough for each state to do something like that. So we'd have to take, there'd have to be some kind of federal mandate where X percent of each state's overall budget, it'd be like a corporate income tax, would get sent to the federal government for the military.
Uh-huh.
And another thing would be, well, what about defending our borders? Well, it doesn't seem...
We're not being defended now.
It doesn't seem like a whole lot is being defended right
now. They haven't been for a long time.
Right. Now, I'll bet, Lisa, that if you went to these states like California, Arizona, New Mexico, uh-huh, Texas, and said, you're allowed to defend your own border, I'll bet these states would be overjoyed, because they've been begging.
I bet there'd be a lot of people on the border.
Yeah. And see, the states, by being able to keep their own money, would be able, uh-huh, to hire full-time border guards that actually enforced,
yeah,
the law.
You know, do the job.
Yeah, because now they have a vested interest in it. Not
right,
that they don't now.
Uh-huh.
But see, what's happened is, at the borders, the states have been handcuffed. They're not allowed to enforce it because this is a federal issue, okay?
Maybe we should all secede from the union.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. What
could we do any worse, really? Think about it.
We'd do better. We would absolutely
start
do better.
Over.
Yeah, so all 50 states would secede from the union, okay? And even though we'd still be the United States of America, because you'd have a military, and... You know, I don't want to sound naive about these things. Another thing you'd have to look at is something like with the food products and the water,
uh-huh,
okay? Because there would ultimately be some of these shyster companies, like those out in Arkansas or whatever, they would try to cut corners at every corner and put an inferior product on the shelves. So there would be a couple things that we'd have to look at that we need the federal government for. But something like education, completely dismantled immediately. Every state would determine their own curriculum. They'd have control over their schools and so forth. How about the post office? Completely dismantled. Taken over by each state or by private industry. Amtrak, dismantled,
mm-hmm,
taken over by private industry. And on and on and on and on. All of this stuff that the federal government now does goes to either private industries or the states, and each state would be allowed to determine how they run their own operation. So, as I said a couple of days ago, I believe it was on Monday, what about issues? What about abortion? What about gun rights? What about drinking age? What about all of these other things that the federal government is mandating us about?
Mm-hmm.
Why can't each state determine how they're going to run their show? Because we know that there's liberal areas of this country, and we know that there's conservative areas of this country.
Mm-hmm.
So a place like Wyoming, that's going to be dead set against abortion, has a different mind frame than a state like, say, Massachusetts. So if each state is allowed to determine how they operate in their own state, then Wyoming could say, well, now we can take control of everything.
Right. You know, the New England states were talking about secession around the time of the War of 1812, and it looks like there's some red and blue states jumping on this bandwagon. They don't say that they're joining, but they are very interested in this absconding from the Union idea.
Well, and that's a good point, because it's not a Democrat or Republican issue. It's a freedom issue, and it's an issue about taking control of your own destiny.
Well, let's put it this way. As someone on the Internet said today in an email that I received, we can either change life or we can just keep changing leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And they all work pretty much under the same regime, toward the same objectives, so we just keep changing the names and the faces, but we're not changing the system. And if the system's irreparably broken,
which it
is, how much worse would we be off trying to start from scratch, start all over again? We already have the basic infrastructures in place. We need to change life and not just these faces and names.
Yeah, and see, there's such apathy now on a national level because everybody thinks, how can they affect their leaders in Washington, D.C.? When somebody from California sends a representative to D.C., they're 3,000 miles away from them. But if the state took control of its own destiny, what would happen then is that if their leaders are suddenly given all the responsibility for the highways and the schools and everything else, if 5 years down the line they're driving down the road and there's potholes on every single corner, instead of blaming it on some faceless, nameless entity, the Department of Transportation in D.C., they go to their own representatives and say, hey, look, we have control of this now. There's nobody but to blame but you. And if these roads go to hell and the schools go to hell, guess who they vote out? Their own local representatives.
Yeah, this convention is the first North American Secessionist Convention in Burlington, Vermont. It's going to be held November 3rd and 4th. At the Wyndham Burlington Hotel. And it's interesting, too. Vermont was an independent republic between 1777 and 1791. So Vermont is one of those states that has a very strong sense of self-identity.
Exactly. It has a rebel stance to it.
I kind of like that.
I mean, when I saw this article yesterday, the more I thought about it, the more I liked the idea. And getting back to these issues, gun control. Do you think a state like Massachusetts that keeps electing somehow or selecting Teddy Kennedy is going to have the same gun laws as, say, North Dakota or something like that? Why should every single state bow down to this omnipotent federal government? Do you remember when we did the interview with Sam and Trish on Tuesday? And they were talking about, in the beginning of this country, the states had control over the federal government.
Right.
But what happened?
Well, there's been a role reversal there.
Right.
And it really wouldn't be a bad idea for people to start thinking more seriously about this. If they don't work for us, if they refuse to listen to us, if everything they do is in diametric opposition to what the people want, if they get us into these wars and they won't... They just simply will not regard what we have to say. They won't answer petitions for redress or grievance. They act like we don't exist, except when it comes to our money.
Well, Lisa, tell everybody how this is probably 3 or 4 years ago, when you were really researching chemtrails, and you wrote to our state representative, Rick Santorum. Tell them, first of all, how long the procedure took, and then the results, which were very ungratifying.
It was a joke. It was just an effort in futility. 6 months it took for Rick Santorum to respond. I was requesting a direct inquiry through the Department of Defense, and Rick Santorum was going to be the in-between, the conduit. And he just sent me an auto-generated letter that didn't answer my original letter.
Right.
So it didn't address any of the issues or concerns. Just they spat out this auto-generated computer crap. And So why bother contacting them? You call them up, you can't get through to them. When you can get through to them, they give you these generic responses. Right.
And then you never hear anything back from them.
Or you talk to their people.
Right.
I want to talk to their people.
Yeah. And then, see, they think that suffices. It took 6 months. They sent a form letter. Doesn't answer any questions. And then, well, that was good enough for you, right? I hope you'll pat us on our head.
If a government agency calls you, do they settle for just talking to your people?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, go somewhere and get a speeding ticket. And when they send the fine to you in the mail, wait 6 months to answer the letter, and then send them a form letter, and don't answer or don't pay the fine, okay?
You say it's the IRS, for example.
Yeah, yeah. Know? Wait 6 months to answer them.
Just refer them to your people.
Yeah.
See if they go for that.
Yeah, but see, when it's the other way around, they seem to think that that's good enough.
Boy, we have to hop and jump through hoops and everything else when Big Brother comes calling, right?
Yeah.
But when it's the reverse, what happens?
Well, you know
what?
You get
their people.
Exactly. What I think we're going to do is contact whoever's in charge of this meeting.
Or their recording machines.
Well, and see who's in charge
yeah,
of it,
like
and try to get them
people
on the phone. And it's hard to go from just a little 2-page article, but we like the idea. And
I tell you what, at least somebody's taken some initiative to do something. Something out of the status quo.
Yeah, and just think, if the responsibility for everything in your state and your community now is all within your hands, that there's not this big blame game, that, oh, it's all just Washington, D.C., business as usual. You know, and they say, write to your congressman. Well, everybody knows that's bogus because, as we just showed, it's ungratifying. It doesn't fulfill what we want. But if every representative in your community, in your state, was directly responsible for what's going on, the entire world would soon change.
I'll tell you what, secession supporters have responded from Hawaii, Alaska, League of the South, and its several of its chapters. Let's see, Washington, British Columbia, Oregon, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia. That's good.
Yeah. So, see, there's interest behind this concept, and I think certainly, it's a step in the right direction. Now, is this conference in Vermont going to change the world on November 3rd and 4th? Of course not. But if we can plant a seed in people's heads and say, think about this. Now, the red tape that everyone would have to go through would be enormous. And I guess today maybe we're just talking more conceptually than anything else.
This article makes a good point, too. It says, the first group of secessionists was the Founding Fathers. The
yeah.
American Revolution was, in fact, a secession from the United Kingdom.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And they did it. Why couldn't we do it? Now, of course, the mountain in front of us is much larger, but the Founding Fathers actually engaged in what? A war. A revolutionary war to take control of their lives. And the Founding Fathers intimately knew the value of states' rights.
Yeah,
they intimately knew that.
I'm one of those people who thinks if there's a will, there's a way. So the question is, do we have the collective will to free ourselves?
Yeah.
It's something to think about.
Yeah. Now, there's one other article I wanted to go over, and it's by a guy we read quite a bit. His name's Dennis Cuddy, and he actually appears, I believe, in some mainstream newspapers, but mostly he's in the alternative press. He writes for News with Views, and he's written about 9/11
uh-huh.
and many other concepts. I think the Federal Reserve and so forth. He does real good work, and he wrote an article the other day, about 3 days ago, called "The Robin Hood and Other Power Elite Principles." So what he did is he outlined a variety of different principles and methods, or I should say, lack of principles, that the ruling elite use to keep everybody under their thumb, to keep them in control. And what we want to do real quickly is go over some of these and give some of our comments. So the first thing they do is corrupt the masses. Now you think, what does that mean? Well, Lisa, we've talked about this before with Bill Clinton. You remember when he was in office and he turned the White House into a big sex parlor? And a lot of people said, well, the economy's good. Why should we worry about his private life? But what he did was he blurred the line between right and wrong and created this huge gray area.
Uh-huh.
So there is no right and wrong. It's just, you know, if the economy's good, who cares what else he did? So that's a perfect example of corrupting the masses. And if anybody just looks at television, network television, today and in the 1950s, mm-hmm. they'll just see an enormous change of how the masses are being corrupted.
Second one was rationalize bad behavior. In other words, if other people cheat, then you have to cheat too to keep up with them. Then that means you can cheat in other things, your job, in your taxes, marriage, etc.
Well, and that goes
making
hand
excuses
in
like poverty causes someone to steal.
Right, and that goes hand in hand with his third example, destroying standards. And I heard on the radio a week or so ago that there was this big poll taken of college students and asking how many of them cheated, and it was quite significant how many admitted to cheating on tests in college. And when asked why they do it, the answer was simple: because they think other kids are cheating and they just have to keep up with them. So by rationalizing bad behavior, it destroys standards and they think it's okay.
Cuddy goes on to say, appealing to the ego of people, compliment people, example, tell students they're smarter than their parents and they won't suspect what you're up to. The flattery will get you anywhere principle.
Right. Another one is create disrespect for the law. And I was just having a conversation about this the other day with illegal immigration, a perfect example where there's an illegal alien, he comes into a town, commits crimes, and yet the mayor and the chief of police in that city don't enforce the law. Instead of checking his status, whether he's a legal or illegal citizen, they just blow it off because some of these, what do they call their safe house communities or whatever, where they don't enforce the immigration laws. And
those zones that they set up for the aliens.
Yeah, and a perfect example is the police officer in Houston that got shot in the face a couple days ago because this guy was arrested for molesting a 12-year-old girl. But instead of throwing him in jail, they deported him back to Mexico. Well, what he did is just skip right back across the border. He got arrested, or he got pulled over by the police and shot him four times and killed him.
Killed the cop, and then the chief of police wasn't going to go after him
or
something.
Right, exactly.
Just incredible.
Yeah, disrespect for the laws.
The next one is dumb down the population. Have a high rate of illiteracy and keep the people ignorant, and instead of focusing on education, focus on things like having fun and video games and, you know, crappy noise that is supposed to be music and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all you have to do is look at
kids can't read, they can't add, they can't think critically, they're not being encouraged to do so.
Yeah, look at our public education system, look at George Bush's No Child Left With a Mind program, look at Bill Clinton when he was governor of Arkansas, how every single year they had, excuse my language, but basically the dumbest kids in the country, and this is what we want again if we put Hillary back in charge. Now, another thing is keep people busy.
Right.
Oh, well.
Distracted.
Well, what does that mean? First of all, because taxes are so high in this country, most people are working not only 40 hours a week, many of them more, plus the wife, ever since the 50s, had to start going out into the workforce. And with that, with kids, everybody doing everything, people are too busy to pay attention to what's going on.
Next thing, wear people down. Create a process that makes it difficult to redress grievances and virtually makes it impossible to get your grievances even acknowledged. They get people so discouraged by the process, all the hoops you have to jump through just to get some live person's attention.
Yeah.
Most people end up giving up.
Yeah, they throw their hands up and say, the hell with it, we don't have time. The next one he calls Robin Hood, something we just mentioned. Taxes.
Yeah, overburden the middle
taxes.
Class.
Yeah, and you know what happens here is the people that make the least amount of money pay the least taxes. Of course, it's the And the rich write all the laws for themselves to get out of it. So who gets burdened? It's the people in the middle of the bell curve, the middle class, and the small business owners that bear the brunt of being crushed by the taxes.
Next one, create a crisis.
Yeah, well, that's simple. That's just spike events. How? Look at history over the last 50, 60, 100 years, and we have all these different spike events. On top of that, fear-mongering. And every few years, 9/11 was the last big one, is they create a crisis.
Next one, divide and conquer. Facilitate divisions via Delphi and...
I mean, look at this. Divide and conquer. It's the left-right paradigm. It's all the partisan BS that we see every day on the TV. And if you go back even to the 70s, as far back as the 70s, all you had was the three nightly newscasts. And you didn't... What this whole partisanship really started with the inception of the cable news networks. When you turn these shows on, and that's why we rarely watch them anymore, is because they bring in the puppet from the left, and they bring in the puppet from the right, and they have 7 or 8 minutes, and all they do is scream and yell at each other back and forth. It's never ending, and it creates this divide and conquer. Nobody can ever come together on anything, and we see the same thing in the alternative media.
Mm-hmm. Create economic incentives to promote globalization. Globalization, give tax breaks to corporations. We see that happening all the time.
Well, plus you see NAFTA, you see GATT, you see CAFTA, you see outsourcing, you see the North American Union. All of this stuff is another technique that the global
right.
elite use.
And then they tell people if they have a problem with it, it's going to affect their 401k, which is invested in the corporation. So
right.
people are just screwed every which way.
Yeah.
Another one's coercive choices. Rather than force people to do things, they coerce them.
Right. Well, look at a perfect example is a revelation that just came out this week from the president of Pakistan, where he said shortly after 9/11, Richard Armitage went over to him and said, unless you join us in this war on terror, we're going to bomb you back to the Stone Age.
Mm-hmm.
It's coercion. And another thing, we've mentioned this week, is that the federal government uses economic blackmail. If you don't follow this law about the drinking age or seatbelt laws or whatever, then we're going to withhold your federal money. Coercion.
Right. Next one is controlled opposition.
Oh, boy.
We're pretty familiar with that one.
Yeah.
You lure people into associating with you. This way you can monitor and control their activities and essentially neutralize them.
Yeah.
We see this going on a lot in the alternative media.
Jesus. I mean, that's one of the things we talk about more than anything else. The perfect example is yesterday's show where we talked about this new disinfo artist on RBN, controlled opposition.
Right. Create false choices. So you contribute to both supposedly opposing groups.
Right.
And look, it's like the Republicans and the Democrats, you know?
It's one party.
Right. You're being given a false choice there because they all work toward the same objective, toward the same goals. It's all political theater, what you see on your TV.
It's a good example is people used to laugh when the Soviet Union was still intact, and they'd say, oh, well, they have elections, but they only have one party running. Well, it's kind of funny because in this country we think we have two parties running, but what really happens is that it's one snake with two heads, and any type of third party that gives a viable alternative, they do everything in their power to eliminate them. I know in this state, Russ Diamond, who we've had on this show I think 3 times, had to raise over 67,000 signatures to get his name on the ballot. Yet the Republicans and Democrats only had to get 2,000 signatures.
Right. Next one is personnel is policy. It's only necessary to control key people, like the person who writes the regulations, certain judges, committee chairman. And by controlling the key people, you end up controlling larger groups of people.
Well, exactly. And in the alternative media, if you control just a few influential people.
Like the person who sets the tone.
Right. Alex Jones. 911truth.org. For a while it was Mike Rupert. So if they can just control a few of these key people, they set the agenda and lead all the lemmings behind them.
Okay? Drug people. That's the next one. Cause people to accept drugs as common and normal and everyday and okay to use, like prescription medication. Look at how our nation is being numbed down. Not just dumbed down, but numbed down with prescription meds.
We have a medicated country, and anyone that doesn't believe that, just look at the big pharmaceutical companies. They're raking in billions, and not only off of adults, Lisa, but look what they're doing to the school children. Anytime a kid gets a little, shows a little bit of creativity, incentiveness, shows some vast interest, he's hyperactive, mm-hmm. and they have to put him on Ritalin or any of these other things.
Right. Population control.
Oh.
Get people to look at other people like they're just animals. And once you get a person to accept another person as just having, what, the value of some other animal, it's a lot easier to get rid of them or, say, sign away their life. Look at what happened with Terry Schiavo.
Well, that's a good point. And this, again, doesn't only happen on a national level. Look at the kind of garbage Mike Rupert was spewing with his population control in regard to peak oil.
And actually, animals that get treated a lot better than Terry Schiavo did.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Next one is kill people. If worst comes to worst, they can always enlist assassins to have people eliminated.
Well, and not only that, but we have war, we have abortion, and on and on and on. So it's what we have is a culture of death where these people at the top of the control pyramid believe themselves now capable of determining life and death. They've made themselves gods.
Yeah, and these are all power elite principles, according to Dennis Cuddy.
And if anybody truly challenges their control system, then what do? They kill them. A good example is John F. Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, George Wallace, and on and on and on. And that's why it's such a joke when someone like Ego Alex Jones says that the New World Order has been trying to kill him for the last 10 or 12 years. If they wanted to kill him...
Doesn't seem like they're trying at all to kill him.
Yeah.
I think if they want to kill you, they just kill you.
Yeah. I mean, when they wanted to kill John Kennedy, guess what they did? One very sunny day in Dallas, Texas, they put a bullet through his brain.
Like 10 years from now, it'll be over 20 years. You think he'll still be saying the same thing, that they've been trying to kill him for over 20 years?
Well, and this kid that they just hired on RBN, this Abramson kid, talked numerous times about how gravely his life is in danger. He's been on the radio for 3 weeks. He's had a website up for 2 months. But now he's public enemy number one, and the New World Order wants to kill him too, just like Alex Jones. If you people buy this stuff, I know people listening to Wing TV don't buy it, but there's so many others out there that are buying it, and they're nothing different than televangelists that sit there with their minions, I guess, in the pews, and fall for this crap. It's just unreal. But Dennis Cuddy did a very good job of showing, in a very simple way, some of the methods that the power elite use to control the masses.
Yeah, it's a very good article. We urge everybody to read it. Give everybody the title of it again.
Yeah, it's...
Robin Hood and Other Power Elite Principles. Is that what it's called?
The Robin Hood and Other Power Elite Principles. It can be found on newswithviews.com. So... tomorrow, the big Wing TV poll results, who's the worst mainstream media talking head. Sam and Trish Britton are going to be on with us, and we're going to have some fun with this show.
Oh, I think so.
All right. Well, until tomorrow, folks, keep your eyes open, because there's a lot going on.
See you all then.